Welcome to Torah to the Nations, where we study the Hebrew roots of our faith. Brought to you by Tree of Life Outlet in Lincoln City. Phone lines are open at 503-316-1220 or contact Don at thejctown.com or Jamie at thejctown.com.
Well, I want to welcome everyone and thank you for tuning in to Torah to the Nations, no matter where you might be around the world. Thank you for listening at thejctown.com and t2tn.com. As you know, Jamie is in Israel right now, but before he left, he got together with Eric Bissell and Bradley, they used to be here in the station at the Board Op, and did an interview about some of the basics of the Paleo Hebrew. I thought you might like to hear that. I know that Eric's one of our favorites. So let's just get right into that interview. Starts out with a question from Bradley.
Doing well, Jamie. My question for you, Eric, is wasn't Paleo Hebrew the language that Moses used when he wrote the Bible, when he wrote the Torah? That's
right.
What I'm after.
Well, you're opening up a kind of a can of worms that there's a lot of conjecture about, speculation, but nobody knows for sure. But let me explain a little bit of the picture. Any archaeological evidence that we find where things are written before 500 BC happened to be written in some version of Paleo Hebrew. It's otherwise called Phoenician. Now, you have to know a little bit about the history of the world in order for any of this to make sense in a context. So let me just address that briefly. Approximately 1500 BC is when Moses, Moshe in Hebrew, had the Exodus event where the people of Israel came out of the land of Mitzrayim, which is Egypt. Right. They wandered around 40 years. The Mount Sinai experience where they were given the tables of stone where Yahweh's own finger wrote the Ten Commandments on them, known as the Devarim. Now, the word Devarim is technically word, but it also means a matter, a thing, you know, just the important stuff.
Right.
It's the word Debir. Now, that was about 1500 B.C. The kingdom of David and Solomon was approximately 1000 B.C., or 900 B.C. So it was like 500 years later. Abraham was about 2000 B.C. So here you have the time of Abraham, about 2000 B.C., Moses about 500 years later, and David and Solomon about another 500 years. And then 500 more years later, you have about 500 B.C., is the time that Babylon came in and invaded Judea and took everybody into captivity, which was the time of Daniel and Ezekiel. Now, 70 years after they were taken into captivity, then you have Cyrus, the Median-Persian king, who allowed the Yahudim, the Jews, to come back to Jerusalem under the governorship of Nehemiah, and Ezra was the scribe. Now, at the time of Ezra the scribe, we see the very first time we have any recorded evidence of the modern Hebrew writing that is now called Chaldean flame letters. Now, everything before 500 BC is some variation of Paleo Hebrew called Phoenician. Now, just to throw a little more history on there, Alexander the Great, who swept through all of what the, you might say, the known earth at the time of any regard, which was the Middle East, was about 300 BC. Okay, so the time of the Maccabees was also just after that, around 200 B.C. Okay, so what you have is to say, okay, Moses was raised in Egypt and probably learned you could expect some form of hieroglyphic writing. And then all of a sudden, we have David in Solomon's era of about 1000 B.C. Everything's written in some form of Paleo Hebrew. Who were the Phoenicians? Jamie, do you know who the Phoenicians were?
Well, they were in the book. You're talking about the book that Collins wrote.
Well, Stephen Collins is the only guy that I've known who's tried to give any sense of identification to these people.
He identifies them as part of the tribes.
Yeah, but the common regard of Phoenicians. Do you know? Or
I'm not sure who the Phoenicians were. One of the other nations around Egypt, weren't they?
But as a historical reference with common education, all I knew for most of my life was that the Phoenicians were a merchant empire of seafaring people. But nobody knows where they came from or what happened to them.
Right.
Now, have you ever heard of the Punic Wars between Carthage and Rome?
I've heard of them.
Do you know who those people were?
No.
Do you know where Carthage came from?
Brad, speak into the mic so we can get
No, Carthage wasn't it part of Rome?
Well, Carthage was a city on the north coast of Africa. So it was, you might say, west of the Egyptian area. And Carthage was actually the great adversary of Rome. Hannibal with the elephants who came through the Alps and all, he was a Carthaginian.
Okay.
And so they had these giant ships, Tyrians, I think they were called, which could load up like hundreds and hundreds of people and elephants and everything else, and they went across the Mediterranean. So these three Punic Wars were between Carthage and Rome, and they were known as the Punic Wars. And it's like, well, what's the connection? I never knew that. Well, Stephen Collins did a bunch of research, and I would have to say it seems credible to me that the word Phoenician has the vowels P-H,
right,
which is an F sound. Well, in Hebrew, the P is the pay, which is also the fe. It's the exact same letter. It's pronounced as either a P or an F or a P-H. So Phoenicians is P-N-C, which is the same as Punic. You add the vowels. Vowels can come and go. So the Phoenicians were ending up to be actually the exact same people as the Punic Wars between Carthage and Rome. And in Hebrew, the word Carthage, which is an Englishization of it, actually means new city.
Okay.
So Chadesh, as in Brit Chadashah, or Rosh Chadesh, means to be renewed, so that's new. And Kirith is the word for city.
Okay.
So Kirith Chadesh becomes anglicized as Carthage. And so, well, who are these Phoenicians that wind up being in Carthage? Well, according to Stephen Collins' research, and I hope I'm accurate about this, and he doesn't hear this and go, whoa! But the Phoenicians had been, in the days of approximately 1000 BC, David and Solomon, they were one empire. Solomon ends up going astray near the end of his life. Yahweh says he breaks the kingdom in half, gives the northern kingdom to Jeroboam, and Rehoboam keeps the southern kingdom. To make a long story short, Jeroboam, Yahweh says, I will give you a destiny of your progeny, your inheritance will remain the throne, keep the throne, just like I promised David, if you do what I say. And Jeroboam says, gee, if I do what he says and allow the people to go to Jerusalem to worship on the festival days that he ordained, I think I'm going to lose the kingdom. I'll lose their hearts and they'll go back to the Torah. So what I have to do is change the instructions in order to keep my kingdom. Well, Yahweh just said, if you keep my ways, you'll keep the kingdom. And he said, I think I should change his ways in order to keep the kingdom. And Yahweh says, that's it. You're out of here. So what happened is that Jeroboam set up two idols in Dan and Beth-El and said, you should worship these. It kind of reminds me of saying Yahweh gave us seven festivals to keep as honoring him, and we've inherited a couple of other festivals at the spring equinox and the winter solstice that were pagan festivals of fertility rites, and we're told to keep
Easter,
those two festivals.
Christmas. Wow, you're
keep
just, I'll
instead.
Tell you what.
Keep it's, those instead.
It's all, it repeats itself, doesn't it? Over
well,
again?
It looks to me like the idols of Jeroboam, you know. So, and I've had some people say, why don't you want to recognize the birth of our Savior? And it's like, well, when the Word incarnate came to tabernacle with us was at the festival of Sukkot, which is the festival of tabernacles, which is an ordained festival invented, designed, created, and imparted to his people by Yahweh himself. But he said, remember, that if Israel, if you forsake my ways, I will take my name out of your mouth. I will take my ways out of your memory. I will give you the confusion of your heathen neighbors who will dominate over you, and you will forget you ever had anything to do with me. And that's exactly what's happened. So the evidence of what we find in our culture is not because the devil's too strong or that our people are too crazy or that we've just, like, invented stuff. It is the manifestation of the truth of Yahweh's word that he says, I will see to it that you get what you preferred, and I will take away any options of coming back to me until the time, that's a key phrase, until the time that the curse is over. So, anyway, this all goes back to, we're talking about Phoenician and which letter wrote. We're talking about Paleo-Hebrew. So right. You say, well, who are the Phoenicians? Well, in English, the closest word is punk, you know, punk.
Yeah.
Where punk comes from is you stupid jerk, you tough guy, you're in everybody's face. And like now maybe some people in the audience are punks and they like it. And it's like, well, that's okay. I'm not trying to put it down. It's just a name, a classification of somebody who's contrary to the interests of society. Where did the name Phoenician came from? From what I understand, the Greeks labeled the Israelite people who forsook the covenant as Phoenician punks, PNC. Pay, noon, cough.
Wow, that's pretty cool. Wow.
Which is to say, why would you do such a thing? You blew off the covenant. You forsook your Elohim. You opted for having the pagan nations around you dominate you instead of letting him protect you and give you the, you know, riding on the heights of the world and ruling this place? Are you nuts? Anyway.
Weren't the Hebrews supposed to pass on their faith? Weren't they supposed to shine their faith so that the whole world could be blessed by Yahweh?
Well, they didn't consider it of enough value to hold on to it. They said, well, okay, we've been given these seven festivals. Well, but wait a minute, those guys over there get to party on the winter solstice and on the summer solstice and on the vernal equinox. I mean, we like their fun. We want to have fun like they do.
They
we don't
really
like the things that Yahweh gave us.
We got to get back to the question about what language was it written
in. Well, here's the point. Yahweh wrote with his finger on tables of stone, and he gave it to Moshe. And during the days of David and Solomon, it apparently was Paleo-Hebrew. Now, I've read about and talked to some people who are, you might say, Jewish scholars, and what they've inherited, is that Yahweh wrote in the modern style of letters on the tables of stone, but somehow it got lost. And around 500 BC, when Ezra found himself in Babylon, he found the lost letters. And so he came back with Torah scrolls written in the modern letters. Now, I might say, wait a second, how'd they get lost? And how'd they end up in Babylon? Now, I'm sure they have a story that tells that, but I just don't know what it is. But here's the question. If Yahweh himself wrote in modern style letters, 1500 BC, and right. David, who was a man after his own heart, now has Paleo writing, and Moshe, who wrote a copy of the Torah, some people think he maybe made 12 copies, but maybe he didn't, maybe just made one and gave it to the leaders of the tribes. But nevertheless, did Moshe change the lettering style, or did Moshe copy it in Paleo? Or was it in modern, in which case, who would have changed it into Paleo? And then why would somebody change it back from Paleo into modern? What's going on here? And you might think, who would possibly change it? Well, I heard one Jewish person who knows about the letters, who studied it greatly, said the Paleo letters are drawings, are glyphs, like icons, of right. Canaanite deities, Canaanite gods. In fact, the word God is, it's the name of one of the tribes, which means, hey, how fortunate, a troop, abundance. In Hebrew, Gimel Dalet is the two letters, their consonants, G and D, and they actually mean fortunate or lucky or, hey, this is great, prosperity and fortune. But the word God was the name, the actual name of a Canaanite deity. So it makes you wonder that it says on a piece of currency that says, in God we trust, who's it referring to? Yahweh said, when Moshe said, who's your name that we should honor you? And I could tell the leaders of Israel who it is I'm talking to. He says, Ayah, Eyeh, Asher, Eyeh, or I am that I am, or I will be what I will be. It's like, hey, don't put me in a box. I'll manifest myself however I choose to. You just take what I tell you and do what I say. But then he says, tell you what, Yud He Vav He, Yahweh, is one way to pronounce it. Yahweh is my memorial name, my Shem of Zakar, which is to say masculinity and to perpetuate in memoriam from generation to generation. door to door,
right,
in Hebrew. So he gave the name Yahweh. But then if we say, in God we trust, Gad happens to be the Canaanite deity's name of fortune and luck, what are we saying?
Now there's a question we'd all like an answer to. If Yahweh said for us to call him by his name, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, and we call him after a Canaanite god, who are we really worshiping? We'll be right back after these messages with more of Eric Bissell.
Abigail, did you know that chariot parts were found at the bottom of the Red Sea?
Really?
And there's proof that Sodom and Gomorrah really burned up, just like the Bible says. They have pictures and books from science and history.
How?
I stopped by KPJC near Chuck E. Cheese on Lancaster to see Jamie, and he showed me the bookstore.
Can we use those for homeschool?
Yes, they even have a thematic teaching by Tony Robinson that teaches you how to memorize scriptures just like the rabbis learned.
Can we go now?
Sure. We'll stop by the bookstore and then go to Chuck E. Cheese.
Let's go! Let's go! Let's go! Let's go!
KPJC 1220 is located at 3190 Lancaster Drive Northeast or www.t2tn.com. Call 503-316-1220. That's 503-316-1220.
Well, we're glad to have you back with Torah to the Nations once again. We are in the middle of an absolutely incredible interview with Jamie and Bradley and, of course, Eric Bissell. Now, Eric is an expert in Paleo-Hebrew, and he has taken these letters and dissected them down to their very earliest meaning so that we can know exactly what Yahweh, our God, had in mind for us throughout all of Scripture and even in prophecy. So let's get right back to that interview. I know you don't want to miss a minute of it here on AM 1220 KPJC and streaming on thejctown.com and t2tn.com. For all of your best Hebraic, Nazarene, Israelite, and Torah-based teachers 24 hours a day, it really is radio you can't get anyplace else.
You know, it's like, no, wait a second. My preference is to say, go back to the pure tongue, go back to the pure instructions, go back to the pure revelation that the Creator of heaven and earth gave to his people. So I personally am trying to retrain myself and not use words that infer deities of the nations surrounding us. For example, the word holy is the name of a goddess from India. Now, we don't think of that if we say the word Holy Spirit, but as a matter of correction and going back to the pure form, I know some people that say, do not mention the word God or holy in my house.
Right.
Do not do it. If you're going to refer to Yahweh, mention it. If you're speaking of the Ruach HaKodesh, the word Kodesh means clean and pure, set apart, distinct, and the ordained form by Yahweh, you might say. And the Ruach is actually the word for the wind or the breath.
Right.
So the ordained, set apart breath of the Creator that he breathed into Adam and by which he vocalized the words that created heaven and earth is the Ruach HaKodesh, then when we say Holy Spirit, we might think of the third person of the Trinity, but the Ruach HaKodesh is almost like that's his breathing, which is his manifestation, his emanation of himself. When you think of his name Yod-Heh, Yod is a hand that represents the Creator, the right. artist, the one who makes. It's a working hand, and Heh is an expression or a revelation like breathing. So we might say Yod-Heh, Yah, is actually the Creator's way or the Creator's expression of himself or the Creator's revelation of himself. That kind of sounds like the Ruach HaKodesh. So simply the word Yah is the Ruach HaKodesh as a concept, not a person necessarily.
Right.
So now all of a sudden when you look at these Hebrew letters, you get into a whole other thing. But then you go back and say, but who would change them? Who would have the audacity or the authority to change the letters either from the modern shape into the paleo, the Phoenician style, or the paleo into the modern? I've only found one verse that even suggests such a thing. Daniel 12:4. Daniel is incarcerated into the captivity of Babylon. He's been there for 70 years, but actually the 12th chapter of Daniel is the very last chapter of the book. A genuine angel shows up and speaks to Daniel and says, Daniel, hide the words and seal the book until the time, there's that phrase again, until the time of the end. Well, that's English. It reads a little different in Hebrew.
Right.
It's ayin dalet means until. Ayin tav means time. And the letters kuf zadi is the word for end. But it doesn't mean the end like a conclusion. It means the end like a border. Like if you were going to be thrown in jail for 30 days, the end of your jail term is kufsadi. That doesn't mean it's the end of your life. It means it's the end of your life in jail. So we have to look at this and say, well, the end of what?
The end of Daniel's imprisonment and the rest of the people in Babylon.
No, no. Daniel was told to hide the words and seal the book until the time of the end. So I've started to ask people, which words, which book, and the end of what? Now, I've had some people say, I don't know, I've never heard this talked about before. So I've tried to ask everybody I bump into that I don't even know. It's like, hey, do you know about this? Have you ever heard a sermon taught on this? Do you have any idea, what clue as to what Daniel is talking about? Has this been accomplished yet? And if it hasn't, I've heard people preach that every possible prophecy has been fulfilled. Jesus should be coming back any day now, and or the rapture or something. It's like, wait a minute, has this been fulfilled? If so, which book, which words, where, what was hidden, and what's now the occasion that after it's been revealed of being unhidden, what words did Daniel hide and seal? Now, Daniel was known as the chief Chaldean. The otherwise name is Magi, which they were the sorcerers, the magicians, the wise men of Media Persia, and according to, again, Stephen Collins' research, became known as the Parthians, and it was the Magi of Parthia that brought gold, frankincense, and myrrh, the treasures to Yeshua when he was born in Bethlehem. That's the connection there. So people say, well, the treasures that they brought were actually the stuff that Daniel stored up because Daniel was one of the wealthiest men of the kingdom. But the point is, Daniel was about 500 B.C. Daniel was a Chaldean. The Chaldeans were the wise men. Daniel was the chief Chaldean, the chief wise man. And about 500 B.C., we come up with modern Chaldean flame letters. Flame letters meaning kind of esoteric, mysterious, almost what we might call today occult.
What we're going to do is get back to the question. The question was, Eric, when we were talking, Brad had asked you, how do we know what language Moses actually, by his finger, wrote the Ten Commandments? And you went through about 20 minutes of explanation, which we got a little bit off on, but you can get back to that now and take it from there.
Okay, so the point is, to part of answering the question is to see this mystery in Daniel chapter 12. Daniel's told by an angel, hide the words and seal the book until the time of the end. And then there's kind of a famous verse that maybe some people have heard, for many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall increase. Another way to translate that is many shall seek diligently, and knowledge shall increase. What are they running to and fro, and what are they seeking? Well, you know, I've heard it said, well, that might be these days because, you know, we got airplanes and trains and space shuttles and satellites. Everybody's running to and fro. We got computers. Knowledge has increased. Hey, maybe that's these days. What is it talking about? But you have to go back before that and say, hide the words, seal the book. What are those words in Hebrew? You might have the words in English and say, how did Daniel hide them? Well, the word for hiding actually means to make general, to obfuscate, to neutralize, to make powerless, to make void of meaning so that they cannot be, the meaning of the words cannot be designated or pinpointed. They become so vague, it's kind of like you have an English word like hide and you don't know, how did he do that? Now, the word is clear, the word is hide, but in English it's like, I don't know what he hid, I don't know which words, and I don't know his mechanism. But in the Hebrew, I have this Hebrew comprehensive etymological dictionary of the Hebrew language for readers of English by Ernest Klein. It's published by Carta Jerusalem. I would encourage anyone who has any interest in Hebrew, get the book. It costs about $100. You can probably find it on Amazon or elsewhere. Big red cover. It's easy to see. Point is, when you look at the Hebrew words, you see what the words mean in Hebrew, not only from the identification of what their letters are, because the letters mean something, but it gives you the right Hebrew meaning, not the English based on Latin, based on Greek, based on Phoenician, based on what used to be Hebrew. So the point is, did Daniel actually hide something? And then the word for steal, seal the book, the sefer, is to put a stopper in it so that something can't be poured out. Close it up so it cannot be accessed. Now you might say, why in the world would Yahweh sit there and tell Daniel to hide, to unclarify, and to seal, make inaccessible words? Doesn't he want us to regard his words? Was it his words that Daniel sealed? Or was it some other words of some prophetic book that one of these days somebody will bust open a cave and find it, like the Dead Sea Scrolls, and say, oh, these must have been the words that Daniel hid and sealed? Nobody knows. Some people say, well, maybe it's the book of Revelation, but the book of Revelation was written in approximately 90 AD, which is 600 years later. How could Daniel have hidden and sealed the words of the book of Revelation? Well, because people who study eschatology, which is the study of end times in these matters, relate the book of Daniel to the book of Revelation, they say, well, maybe there's a correlation there. But an angel in verse 4 tells Daniel, hide the words and seal the book.
Right.
And then in verse 9, the angel says to Daniel, okay, so the words are hidden and sealed. What did Daniel do? What did Daniel do between verse 4 and verse 9? Well, if you read the narrative in that chapter, mind you, this is the very last chapter of the book of Daniel. There's nothing more written by or from Daniel after this chapter. And it goes something like this. Go your way, Daniel, hide the words and seal the book until the time of the end, for many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall increase. Then I, Daniel, looked, and I saw one on this side of the river and one on that side of the river. And I saw one above the waters of the river, clothed in linen. And I said to this one, hey, how long until the end of these wonders? And the man clothed in linen, above the waters of the river, held his right hand and his left hand to the heavens, and swore by him who lives forever that it would be for time, times, and half a time. And I, Daniel, looked, and I didn't understand. So I said, could you please tell me how long till the end of these wonders? And he said, go, Daniel, for the words are hidden and sealed until the time of the end. Okay, let's stop right there. How are they? Daniel was told to hide and seal the words.
Right.
And now he says, go, the words are hidden and sealed. Quit asking questions. It's already been done. It's like, did Daniel do something between verse 4 and verse 9? Does it sound like Daniel did anything?
It doesn't sound like it.
Gives us a narrative of what he saw.
Right.
And then it says, go, Daniel, for the words are hidden and sealed in time of the end, until the time of the completion of the fragmenting of the hands of the Kadosh people, the set-apart people,
right,
will be, what happens after this? And he says, go, Daniel, for the words are hidden and sealed until the time of the end. They will be elucidated, clarified, refined by many. None of the wicked will understand. From the time the daily offering is removed and the mute abomination put in place, 1,290 years, praiseworthy is the man who waits and comes to 1,335 years. But as for you, Daniel, go your way, and basically you'll live out your life and die, and then arise to your portion at the end of days. That's Daniel 12. That's Daniel 12, which is the end of the chapter. That's all we hear from Daniel. So the question is, what did Daniel hide and seal? Well, the thing is, if you know the meanings of the letters in Hebrew, what I see here is that every phrase, as I paused in between sentences there, concepts, it identifies the meaning of each letter, which means, from my estimation, that the sentences, the structure of Daniel chapter 12 is the code of interpreting the meanings of the letters of the Hebrew alphabet. 22 letters,
okay.
22 phrases between the command to hide the words and seal the book and arise to your portion at the end of days. That's Aleph. This is the plan. Here's your project. Hide the words and seal the book, and arise to your portion at the end of days is the Tav, is the last letter, which is the conclusion of the matter, and everything in between. But the question is, how do you know what the letters mean? Well, it goes back to the question, what letters did Yahweh write in, did Moshe write in, on the tables of stone? Well, if Daniel was the chief Chaldean, and he was instructed to hide the words and seal the book, what mechanism did he use? He was about 500 B.C. Ezra was about 500 B.C. Ezra comes back with the modern Hebrew writing. People right. suggest Ezra changed it, but Ezra was a scribe. A scribe, you might say, has a sworn duty to not change anything, to copy exactly letter by letter, not translate, not paraphrase, not give commentary, exact rendering, exactly the number of letters, exactly the spacing, page by page. The Hebrew scriptures are in exact copy format, unlike
right.
English. Now, people have said, well, the ancient writings had no spaces between the words, and you couldn't really tell where the words broke, and so you had to be a scribe with esoteric insight to know where the breaks were. Well, a friend of mine has done some research, and there's a couple Greek copies of the Septuagint where that's exactly the case. There's no breaks between the letters, between the words, and so there you have to know what it says before you can read it. But it's interesting that Homer wrote the Odyssey, and there's spaces between the words, apparently, so that's not typical of what everybody wrote like, just those who want to hide cryptic information and be in the position of dispensing the interpretation of the information, which is like, you know, some ecclesiastical orders have done through time. The point is, Daniel was told to hide the words. Daniel was a chief Chaldean. Could Daniel have changed the paleo into the modern, otherwise known as the Chaldean flame letters, in order to hide the book and seal the words, which were tangible? When you turn something into flame, it's non-tangible, it's more ethereal. It all seems to fit. If Daniel changed the paleo to the modern, then did Yahweh originally write with the modern? There's no evidence of that. But because people so regard the divinity, you might say, of the modern Hebrew letters, they say Yahweh must have written in that letter because they're so profound, because the meanings, the shapes of the letters are so beautiful, are so, there's such a wonder of explaining, of declaring truth just in the shapes of the modern letters. And it's like, well, if an angel had told Daniel that was his mission, he certainly could have empowered him to do that. So whether Daniel invented it on account of his own artistic license and his great wisdom that had given to him, Solomon was given great wisdom too, Daniel might have invented it, or it might have been that he was given the impartation to do something that was so highly regarded, even today it's given that those letters fell from heaven, you might say.
Well, we're getting some pretty incredible information here on Torah to the Nations today. I want to remind you, if you need to reach us or would like to reach us, you can do that at 503-316-1220 or email me, don@thejctown.com. Don't forget, you can listen in and tell your friends and family about us, t2tn.com. We'll be right back.
Love for Israel Conference, www.loveforisraelconference.com.
It's what you've been looking forward to all year long, and it's finally here. The Love for Israel Annual Summer Conference is up and rolling. Get your registration in early so that you get the best accommodations possible. This year's conference is being held at Canby Grove Conference Center, and the meal packages are included in registration. Whether you are a Christian, a Hebraic believer, or anyone who believes in the truth of the Bible and loves gathering with other like-minded truth seekers, the Love for Israel Conference is for you. Speakers include Bill Cloud, Tony Robinson, Mark Biltz, and many more. Go to www.loveforisraelconference.com for more information or call 541-788-8180. That's www.loveforisraelconference.com. Loveforisraelconference.com or call 541-788-8180. Well, I can't believe it's here already. But we are in the third segment of Torah to the Nations, and this is one of those kind of programs with Eric Bissell that absolutely can change your life and blow your mind. Why is that so? It's because so many of the things we've been taught, so many of the things that we've grown up to believe in aren't true. Now, that's not putting anybody down. That's not being angry at anybody. It's just saying, our Father, in His mercy, has given us the chance to learn more. And why would He? It's because it's the end of days, and He's trying to prepare us for what's to come. The Bible is a cyclical event. It's a book. It's a roadmap that He's given us for the end times, and the things that that have happened before are going to happen again. So let's get back to this great information with Eric Bissell and Jamie and Bradley.
The point is, Daniel was told to hide the words. Daniel was a chief Chaldean. Could Daniel have changed the paleo into the modern, otherwise known as the Chaldean flame letters, in order to hide the book and seal the words, which were tangible? When you turn something into flame, it's non-tangible, it's more ethereal. It all seems to fit. If Daniel changed the paleo to the modern, then did Yahweh originally write with the modern? There's no evidence of that. But because people so regard the divinity, you might say, of the modern Hebrew letters, they say Yahweh must have written in that letter because they're so profound, because the meanings, the shapes of the letters are so beautiful, are so, there's such a wonder of explaining, of declaring truth just in the shapes of the modern letters. And it's like, well, if an angel had told Daniel that was his mission, he certainly could have empowered him to do that. So whether Daniel invented it on account of his own artistic license and his great wisdom that had given to him, Solomon was given great wisdom too, Daniel might have invented it, or it might have been that he was given the impartation to do something that was so highly regarded, even today it's given that those letters fell from heaven, you might say. But that doesn't necessarily prove that it wasn't the paleo letters. Now, the thing about the paleo letters Paleo just means ancient, of archaic origin. The thing about the paleo letters is that they're shapes of objects, and those objects give reference to the meanings of the letters. It's kind of like right brain, left brain. You know, right brain is kind of artistic, left brain is more mathematical. So the meanings of the letters as pictures give you exact reference, but if something's more a little ethereal, it's the other half of your brain. So if you see something that has no tangible reference, like a regular letter, which is kind of just this general, it's a tool used to spell words with, half your brain is shut off. But if you see the letters or pictures that mean something, now you've engaged this whole other half of your brain, which goes into the interpretation or the reading of words. So the point is, when you look at these letters, like this one fellow said, the reason why the Jews, you might say, today don't have a regard to the paleo is because they know that those letter shapes are pictures of Canaanite deities, Canaanite gods, because they don't want to acknowledge the credibility or there's an instruction, do not let the names of the foreign deities even be in your mouth. So some people I know even say the word God, which is the name of a Canaanite deity, shouldn't even be on our mouth because it was the name of a Canaanite deity. Well, the point is, pay no attention then to the paleo letters because they're pictures of Canaanite deities. And it's like, no, wait a minute. Were they originally, or is that what the Canaanites did to it? The Canaanites may have taken those pictures, spun them into deities, and then ran off with it and made such perversions and abominations that Yahweh told his people Israel to come in and eradicate the land from them because they had so profaned the soil because of their customs of the way they worshiped their deities. So the point is, that doesn't mean that the paleo was originally wrong. But then you have to go back and say, well, what do those letters look like and what do they mean? If you can read by the meanings of the letters from the paleo perspective, and it's very clear, well, then Daniel's job, if this is what Daniel did, changed them from the paleo to the modern and made them Chaldean flame letters, would have effectively generalized, obfuscated, neutralized, and make unintelligible the letters that were paleo, thus accomplishing the task that the angel gave him, which is perpetuated until today. So if Daniel says, was told, hide the words of the book until the time of the end, here's where it gets a bit tricky. Until the time of the end of what? The word in Hebrew spelled until is ayin dalet, which in paleoglyphic shapes is literally an eyeball and a door. Ayin dalet.
Okay.
Ayin is an eyeball, dalet is a door. Then there's a hyphen, and then there's another word which means time, and it's ayin tav. Ayin is an eyeball, tav is the last letter of the Hebrew alphabet, which means a mark or a sign or the sign of the covenant. The covenant being an agreement like a contract, and so even today, when you sign a contract, you have a list of terms, and at the bottom it says, sign at the X. The X is the sign of agreement. And people who don't spell their name, but they can sign an X, and it means this is the agreement, I agree to these terms, this is the sign, we have a covenant, we have a contract.
Right.
So ayin tav means understand the terms of the contract, the covenant between who? Between Yahweh and the people Israel, is one way to interpret that. So here you have this hyphenated word saying until the time. Until the time of what? Let's suppose, as a method of riddle, that Yahweh has embedded within the words, in Hebrew, the answer to the riddle. Until the time, let's suggest, is answered by the meanings of the letters, ayin dalet, ayin tav. Ayin dalet can be read as an eyeball and a door. The eyeball also speaks of the word for understanding or knowledge or insight or being able to see. See the door. Understand the door. Comprehend what the door is.
Need to let you know you've got 5 minutes to finish up.
Okay. Ayin tav, then, would be understand the terms of the covenant. Which covenant? Now, there was a fellow who wrote an article about the various covenants, and he said there was at least 7 covenants, depending on how you count them, maybe 12 or 15, the whole bunch of covenants. Which one's the covenant? What's the covenant with Abraham? Covenant with Abraham is he gets the land. Covenant with Noah, there's not going to be a flood. Is that the covenant? What about the new covenant compared to the old covenant? What are the terms of the new covenant? Where is the old covenant? You know, he gave us the 10 commandments. Is that the covenant? Or is that just aspects of the covenant? These are questions that there's no answer to. Now, what I found, though, is that if you know what the letters of the alphabet mean,
right,
from Aleph through Tav, 22 letters, they are the covenant. They're a form of the covenant, like a skeleton is the form of a certain creature. A human skeleton looks different than a dog skeleton. And then you can have the human skeleton and pile bone, flesh and ligaments and muscles and everything else on top of it, and you end up with different shapes, but they're all human skeletons. The Aleph through Tav, 22 letters, is the form of the covenant. Every time Yahweh speaks about a covenant to one of his people, whether it's Adam or Noah or Abraham or Moshe or Jeremiah 31, he embellishes the framework of the covenant. But the crux of the matter, the bones of the matter, the form of the matter is designated by Aleph through Tav. So if you understand that that's the covenant, then you can say, well, how do you know what that means, though? Because if somebody says Aleph is an ox, Bet is a house, Camel is a gimel, Dalet is a door, He is a window, Vav is a nail, Zion is a weapon, Het is a fence, how is that a covenant? It all depends on what you key the letters to. So how do you know how to key the letters? Well, that's the other half of the formula. And Dalet, understand the door. What door? I don't see no door. The door to understanding the covenant. Well, Yeshua kind of made it clear for us. He said, I am the door. He could say, well, who's he? Well, if you say, okay, he's this guy, this prophetic guy that showed up 2,000 years ago, and he changed the Sabbath day to Sunday. He nailed the covenant to the cross, and it buried. He rose from the dead. He gave us a new covenant. He said, we no longer have Israel because they went wayward. We got the new people called the church, and we got new festivals, Christmas, Easter, and Halloween, instead of the seven festivals. Is that him? And you'll, now, here's where the trick is.
Is not Yeshua the Aleph Tav?
He said he's also the Aleph and Tav, which is the beginning and the end, the first and the last. In Greek, it's Alpha and Omega. In English, it's A and Z. What does that mean? Is it more esoteric riddles? Here's the point. There's a verse in the Old Testament. There's many of them, but one in particular, Yahweh speaking, says, as I have planned, so it shall be. As I have purposed, so it shall come about. And in studying the meanings of the letters, I realized what he is saying is Aleph Tav, Aleph Tav. Aleph is the plan or the purpose.
Okay.
The plan or the purpose coming about and becoming the reality is what the Tav means.
Okay.
So to say, the words which come out of my mouth, Aleph, will not return to me void, not having become accomplished, but they will accomplish whatsoever I set them forth to do. That's the definition of Aleph and Tav.
Okay.
And that's Yahweh's signature. He says, if there's a prophet and he says something and it doesn't come to pass, you'll know it didn't come from me because this is my signature. When I say something is going to happen, it's going to happen. So here's the point. Ayin Dalet, Ayin Tav. Who is Yeshua? He is described by the meanings of the 22 Hebrew letters, which incorporate within them the seven festivals and the Sabbath day. And the fact that he is Yeshua ben Yosef, the common man, the letter Vav, and Yeshua ben David, the exalted man, the letter Resh. How do you identify the meanings of the letters is Ayin Dalet, understanding Yeshua. So you understand that each of the 22 letters identify who the Messiah is, not, here's trouble, not the Christian Jesus, but the Hebrew Yeshua.
Right.
It describes who he truly is. That's the way you understand the meanings of the 22 letters, and you realize then Yeshua identified himself as the one who's described by the 22 letters, and the 22 letters find their identity in his stuff, his being, his nature. You now have a catch-22, 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet. You can't have either one defined independently, but you either have neither of them or both of them. Ayin Dalet, Ayin Tav, until the time you realize that Yeshua the Messiah is identified by the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet, and the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet are the reckoning which identifies who he is, which he is the master, the creator of the Shabbat, the Sabbath day, the seventh-day Sabbath. He is the one who gave us his festivals, the seven festivals, and he's the one who said, I'm the creator of heaven and earth. I created the earth in 6 days, rested the seventh day. That's the sign, if you keep the seventh day, that you're my people, I'm your Elohim. And when you get that, you understand that it's keyed to the pattern of the Mishkan, the tabernacle, which is a model of the 7 days and the seven festivals, which identifies then the meaning of the letters of the alphabet. So given the pattern, you can identify then every Hebrew word spelled with the 22 letters, which then found its way into Greek and Latin. So the crux of the Semitic languages are that Yahweh is the creator of heaven and earth, made it in 6 days, rested the seventh. He gave us seven festivals in the pattern of the Mishkan, which translates the Hebrew alphabet by identifying the Messiah.
That's exciting stuff.
Until the time that you know this, hey, that's the end of what? The end of the curse? The end of the confusion? The end of the hiding and sealing? Could that be today? Could that be right now, according to what the angel told Daniel? But people say, well, we're upon the end of the earth. Say, why should this be the end of the earth now when we're just getting back the stuff that he hid from us because our forefathers considered to be worthless and preferred the ways of the heathens instead of the ways of Yahweh? It seems to me like, gosh, to end it now would be crime of the century.
Well, but the time has to come.
The time of what?
The time of the return of Yeshua.
the time of the end of the exile, the time of the end of the confusion, the time of the end of the curse, the time when Israel will receive the blessing that was promised in Deuteronomy 30. If you will turn back to my commandments, my precepts, my statutes, which is to love Yahweh your Elohim with all your heart, soul, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. When you, Israel, turn back to doing that my way, which is to say, observe the Sabbath day and the festivals. That's the way you walk with observing worship of obedience to Yahweh. Worship and obedience is the same word.
Right.
And the servant is the same word, obed, like Obadiah,
is not
servant
a,
of Yah.
Is there not a group of people who are coming out of the world and doing just that very thing now?
It can be anybody in the world that wants to. It doesn't have to be part of an exclusive group by genetics, just by the disposition of one's heart to seek the creator of heaven and earth and do things his way instead of the inherited, confused way that we've got from our forefathers, because that was the curse that Yahweh put on them.
Right.
So my point is, loving your neighbors yourself shouldn't be so hard. It's like, hold yourself to a standard of doing the right thing and quit ripping off your neighbor and doing the wrong thing by him. Be merciful unto him when he blows it. That is doing mishpat, which is doing the judgments of justice and righteousness. And it's like, is it that hard? Don't work on the Sabbath day, observe the seven festivals, thus honoring his name, his Shem of Yahweh, the creator of heaven and earth, and do the right thing and quit ripping off your neighbor and give him a break when he does something wrong. That's about as difficult as it gets, as far as I can see. And when people of his people, Israel, start doing that, it seems to me that what his words say, that he's going to do something. He's going to step in and do something. Now,
right.
It may not follow the eschatology of what we have inherited based on misinterpretation, based on bad language and confusion.
Right.
So we might have to look at the last couple thousand years of eschatology and say they might be off track, because the words of Daniel were hidden and sealed until the such a time that you would recognize who Yeshua the Messiah truly is, and you would recognize what the meaning of the alphabetic letters truly are, which is the identity of Yeshua the Messiah. And if you don't have both, if you refuse to regard the authority of the Torah, you'll never know who Yeshua is. And if you don't regard who Yeshua the Messiah is, you'll never understand true meaning of the language.
Wow,
so here now I've stepped on probably an awful lot of toes, but the point is, don't take my word for it. Look at it for yourself.
Yeah.
Look at the meanings of the letters and see if what I'm saying isn't so. And if it's not so, hey, please tell me. I don't want to be wrong.
You've been listening to Torah to the Nations. We're heard at 8 a.m. Pacific time every weekday. Don't forget, this is so important. Email your friends and your family. Everything depends on it for them. It's just not about this station, as this Hebrew nation is being built. We'll be back live tomorrow with Jim Staley. But until that time, make sure and call in. If you have Christian friends and pastors who need to get his DVD called Truth and Tradition, we have some of those in now. And if you can get them in the hands of your leadership, we want to give them to you for free. Otherwise, they're only $5 instead of the $20 he usually charges. But this time, the reason you're hearing what you're hearing and learning what you're learning isn't for you. It's because you're a first fruit, and it's your responsibility not to sit back and wait for someone else to do it. But let's change the world. Let's change the understanding of our Father and his Messiah, Yeshua. We'll be back tomorrow. The number here is 503-316-1220.